and continuing to participate in these remote meetings, especially during COVID. As we know, CROG and our ability to represent 38 different municipalities has a lot of work that we do. And I want to, first of all, open up and thank the employees of CROG who continue to do yeoman's work even under these kind of distant times. I would like to ask now if there's anyone on here or would like to offer a public comment. If not, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes from the March 27th, 2020 meeting, which are posted. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved. Erica Wyszynski.
Thank you, Erica.
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. And the motion carries. Thank you. The next, we'll turn over to Dr. Lyle Ray to talk about any correspondence and handouts that were in your package, and he can briefly touch on them. They will be placed on the screen, as you see. And Lyle, I don't know if you have any comments that you wanted to offer on these or just to move on to the executive director report.
Lyle, your sound is, there's something wrong with your microphone. Mayor, did you want to do a quick roll call?
I thought maybe you just had, I'm sorry. Go ahead. If you have that information, yes.
That's okay. Yeah, we'll zip through it real quick if you don't mind.
All right. While Lyle adjusts his microphone.
Perfect. Okay, based on the RSVPs we received, we should have Brandon Robertson from Avon.
Here.
Chris Edge, Berlin. Josh Kelly Bolton. Bob Smith Bloomfield. Bob Bessel Canton.
Yep.
Mark Walter, Columbia. John Elsesser, Coventry. Jim Hayden, East Granby.
Present.
Jason Bauza, East Windsor.
Here.
Lori Spielman, Ellington.
Here.
CJ Thomas, Farmington.
Present.
Chip Beckett, Glastonbury. Richard Johnson, Glastonbury. John Ward, Granby. Scott Shanley, Manchester. Tony Moran, Mansfield.
Here.
Brock Weber, New Britain.
Here.
Robert Lee, Plainville.
Present.
John Mayer, Rocky Hill. Melissa Appleby, Simsbury.
Here.
Mark Shota, Southington. He was there.
He's here.
Okay. Mike Maniscalco, South Windsor.
Here.
Melissa Mack Suffield. Mike Rosen, Tolland.
Here.
Mike Picaro, Vernon. Sherry Cantor, West Hartford.
Here.
Hart, West Hartford.
Here.
Erica Wyszynski, Willington.
Here.
Peter Souza, Windsor. And Chris Kervick, Windsor Locks.
Here.
Great. And then some outside agencies, our guests, we would like to welcome DOT Deputy Commissioner Garrett Ucolito.
Here.
Grayson Wright.
Here.
Vicki Shotlin. Maureen Lawrence.
Here.
Alex Johnson from Capital Workforce.
Here.
Brian O'Connor, CCM.
Here.
Jean Goddard, Metro Hartford. Kathy Lutz, Rome Smith and Lutz.
Here.
Jonathan Ferrigno, Eversource.
Here.
Great. Is there anyone else on the call that joined that I did not mention?
Mark Massaro with Eversource.
Great.
Kim, was there a representative from Capital Workforce Partners? Was Alex on?
Yeah, Alex is here.
Okay, good.
Ellen Graham from Senator Blumenthal's office.
Thanks, Ellen. Okay, thank you all.
Is there anyone else on the call that was not recognized? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. Lyle, has your audio been fixed? Uh-oh. No, we don't hear you. We hear you, but it's squawking.
How about this?
That's perfect.
All right. Yeah, well, Zoom is up to its old tricks. My computer that's worked for 6 months decided not to work just now. Anyway, so here we go. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. In terms of my monthly report, I'm not going to walk through the regular monthly report and only respond to questions, but I did want to highlight the fact that the statewide Economic Development Administration grant for $9.3 million was submitted, and I want to thank Tim Malone on the call and Pauline for getting that together. It was a major cat herding exercise, and we will look to hear in 30, 45, or 60 days, which is basically the COVID recovery for 21 and 22. We're still negotiating with OPM on 2020 money for the COVID activities of CROG, but the 21-22 grant is in, and it has funds for CROG as the administrator, as well as activities in the region, and we have funds, and Gene Goddard's on the phone. Everybody got trimmed, but there's funds for the Metro Hartford Alliance, as well as CROG and other state agencies. So the upshot of this is we will hear, as I say, we haven't got a time certain as to when we're going to hear from this, but if you're interested in a briefing, CCM, and I see CCM rep is on here, Brian O'Connor, CCM and COST are being asked by the governor's office to do a detailed briefing of the statewide EDA grant that we put in. And individual, obviously, members of CROG are welcome to get a more detailed briefing at any time. So that's a major lift. That item is in, and we will keep you informed as to the progress on that grant. Again, the grant is the 21-22 time period. And once that gets finalized, obviously, we have a lot more work to do on that. So those are that's the main highlight I wanted to hit on this. We're also working on, half a dozen studies, and Mayor LeClaire knows you're on the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. We have a number of studies on accelerating the use of information technology for state and local services, one on municipal aid reform, and another one that was, I think, quite interesting based on Massachusetts, and that is looking for best practices on the local government level and then pairing that with grants to actually do them. So the ACAR studies are launched, and I've been sort of asked to shepherd that along, and we now have a launch on that. So those are the two major aspects that I wanted to respond to at this time, Madam Chair. And if anyone has questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Any questions for Lyle in regards to his report? Seeing none, we'll move on. Are you, Joyce, going to scroll? Do you have something under opportunities and resources, Lyle?
The only piece I would add to that, Madam Chair, is that the Economic Development Administration grant, there are two grants being submitted. One on behalf of the Council of the Governments that CROG put together, and the second one by Global Resilience and the McChrystal Group. Global Resilience and McChrystal Group are going to be doing an assessment and working in the towns in our region and other regions in the state. But the upshot of that is they are also going to be helping us to plug into federal resources for the COVID recovery. So there will be additional opportunities as we go through the grant. So they're, we hope, going to be rainmakers for federal funding, and we will keep folks apprised as that emerges. So that will be something to keep an eye on. And then later on here is the federal liaison point in our additional opportunities. But the main thing is the EDA grant is anticipated to have an element of searching out more available federal funding sources to help with COVID recovery.
Great. Thank you, Lyle. Any questions for Lyle in regards to those comments? If not, items number C through F were in your packet. I hope you have the opportunity to scan through them. We're not going to go through each one and talk about them, but if there was any specific questions, we'll entertain them at this time. So if anyone has any questions in regards to the Municipal Services or Purchasing Council, Policy and Planning, the Public Safety and Homeland Security, or the Transportation Committee summaries, you can review them in your packet. So is there any questions in regards to any of these items?
Madam, right. I have a general question.
Yes.
I had a 12 o'clock meeting on my calendar. Am I in the wrong meeting did I have the wrong time?
Nope, 12 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
You're in the right meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Were you here for the attendance? Were you recognized, Scott?
I wasn't, but I just realized it's 12:12. Oh boy. It's been
That's
a great
all right.
day. Been a great day. Sorry.
How's your day going so far, Scott?
We're glad you're here, Scott.
Yeah, I will mute myself for good now.
It happens to all of us. There are no questions in regards to these. Certainly, if you have any questions after the meeting, you can follow up directly with Krog, and they'll be happy to answer them. We're going to move right in. There was no one from Metro Hartford Alliance. Their attendance was tentative.
Gene Goddard was there, Madam Chair.
Oh, I thought he was not.
Marsha, Becky Nolan is here as well.
Oh, okay. Well, who wants to speak? Either Gene or Becky?
I'll let Gene go ahead.
Okay, all great. Right.
Thanks, everybody. Just wanted to follow up. Yesterday, we had our quarterly board meeting where we went through a lot of things and activities at the Alliance. Some of the exciting things I wanted to bring up to you is we announced the name of our new talent initiative called All Heart. ALLHART, which is will focus on pulling together all the resources, all the great things that the Hartford region has to offer, from the coastline to the Massachusetts border and everywhere in between, to support the talent that we're trying to attract for our companies and our communities throughout our area. So look for more of that and a logo to be released within the next couple of months. Project that we continue to do a lot of work on promoting the region through trade shows and other events, although they are virtual now instead of face-to-face. One of those occurred last week with the ITC World Tour. The InsurTech Connect did, because they weren't able to have their conference in Las Vegas. They're doing a two-part conference this fall, one last week where they did a world tour, making stops at 30 locations around the globe. To showcase the communities and the companies. Our tour stop was last week. We had over almost 550 people participate and hear stories and pitches from six of our InsurTech companies. The winning company was Cover Financial Technologies from our region, and they will go to a national international competition in a few weeks to present their business pitch to potentially receive funding from those that are participating in that event. For those on the ED side, if you haven't participated in the IEDC, International Economic Development Council conferences in the past, their event is virtual coming up in mid-October. I recommend anybody that's interested to participate in that. That's a great event. And look for that mid-October. Cornet Global is also taking place next month, as well as our own Insurance Capital Summit event, October 22nd and 23rd. You can register for that to learn more about what we're doing and what's happening in the insurance sector within our region. Projects continue to stay very active, as Becky's on the line, she can also attribute to. We continue to see 2 to 3 new projects every week coming in from site selectors, companies locally, and as part of our partnership with DECD and Advanced CT. Some of those are in the warehouse distribution sector. Some of them are in the large IT sector. So you may hear names like Project Goose, which is a logistics project, Project Topeka, which is a large IT project. Project Sale is a manufacturing project in the aerospace industry, and Project Good Health is another one that is located in the insurance sector. Lastly, the other thing we brought up at our board meeting that I would, Lyle, if we can maybe spend some time at your next meeting, I'd like to go through this in more detail. We brought in Cohen Resnick to assist us in doing a effective tax rate analysis. So many of you may be familiar with the Tax Foundation, which does a national analysis on statutory tax rates, but when it really doesn't get into what a company actually would pay based upon a scenario of certain things. So what we did is we had them look at a manufacturer warehouse company and an office project and do a comparison of what a company would pay from, say, the mosquito control district through local government all the way up to state and get a really good understanding in how we compare with four other locations on the manufacturing side and compare us to Boston and New York on the office space side. And needless to say, those national studies don't really do us a lot of justice, but when you get into the numbers and the weeds and understand what a company actually would pay, we really rank well, really well. And so I'd like to be able to share that with you guys moving forward so that you can get an understanding of what our companies are actually paying and how we position ourselves with other locations.
Great. Right. Hey, thank
Madam
you.
Madam Chair, if I could just, can I ask a question? Gene, we're certainly at your disposal and love to look at that. The other piece, I hope I'm not getting feedback here, in terms of an offer, the Governor's Workforce Council is doing a Next Generation Partnership Initiative, and the Metro Hartford Alliance is working on that. David and I have been exchanging emails, but we need to close the loop, and we'd be happy to help work on that. It used to be called clusters, but industry sector partnerships where we've extended an offer to try and facilitate that, and then you and I could perhaps set up a call to talk about your tax study, and then we could move from there. I just wanted to put that in there.
Sounds great.
In the water.
The other pieces that we'd like to share with you is our talking points memo, which is kind of a sales sheet that everybody in the region can use as they're talking with other businesses, talent they're trying to attract, or even their kids that they want to keep within the region, to give them some key points, like we're number one location for Fortune 500 companies per capita. We're in the top 10 happiest states. We're number five for innovation. we're top 10 cities for millennials.
State thing.
Well, that's according to Wallet Hub, and so I'll trust them.
I don't. Sorry.
Top 10 cities for millennials. So those are some things that we want to share with you so that you can use them in your materials or your talking points to talk about the great things about our region and the great things about our state. We often kind of, follow the media. If it bleeds, it leads, and talk about the bad things, but we really need to talk about the great things that strengthen us and build us up. So if we could maybe, Lyle, spend 20 minutes at your next meeting, I'd love to talk about these two things and then also what we're doing on our talent initiative.
Thank you.
Yep.
Madam
Chair, I would just say go ahead. Yeah, Gene, let's set up a meeting shortly or a call shortly and figure it out. So sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So Gene, I was just wondering, some of the information that you gave and some of the dates would be great if you could distribute that. I'm wondering if in our monthly package, if you could prepare a summary. It looked like you were reading kind of off of a summary, if that would be something that you would be willing to include in our distribution to our membership. Along with your present, your periodic presentation, that would be really probably great information, not only the talking points, but also the dates about the IEAC and the other information. I think the more that Metro Hartford can share that information with our members, the more we can get on the same page and really support all of the efforts that Metro Hartford has been putting forward for our regional investment.
Happy to do that, Madam Chair. If the staff could just let me know 2 weeks ahead of time when you want the information, we'll get it off to you and include in your packet. So thanks so much.
And you think we can get a summary of those, the dates out? So if you, Kim, can just get those, that'd be great.
We'll get them off to you by the end of the day today.
Thank you so much, Jean. Any other questions for Jean? Seeing none, we'll move along. We'll move right in as Alex, our Capital Workforce Partners, to give a summary. There was a summary in your package about the summer youth workforce, but Alex, you want to bring us up to date on the initiatives at CWP?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And we did provide a preliminary report to you because I know we wanted to, at this meeting, at least let the towns know what level of participation was provided to residents of their community. So we did put this report together to speak to that issue specifically. Just a little background on the summer program. The summer program was provided for funding through the State Department of Labor under the Connecticut Youth Employment Program. We received a share of $4.5 million. So we received about $1.3 million of state funding to support this initiative. But in addition to that, we were able to get some support from some of our local and community foundations, including CHIFA, who provided some resources to supplement the support in our municipalities. And as you know, and as I spoke previously, this was a challenging year in that, you know, with COVID, we were fairly or not optimistic that we would be able to provide the traditional supports that young people provide. Typically, the summer program is workplace learning-based programming where young people are placed into a work site and provided supports within that site to learn their work readiness skills. This year, due to COVID, we had to radically change the structure of the program. We were able to quickly adopt a virtual learning model where we used a number of virtual learning tools to provide engagement, particularly for our younger youth. And we divided the program up based on the age because we wanted to have age-appropriate service to our young people, and our older youth were able to participate in work sites. So I do want to just note under this report that we were able to provide support to a number of our communities. We served almost 1,200 young people, which was a challenge, but at the end of the day, our provider community was very responsive and we worked very diligently to ensure that our young people had a meaningful experience this summer. We were fortunate that we were able to get employers to sponsor almost 300 work sites. So for our older age individuals, they received a 40-hour component of online learning using our career labs and work readiness platform, coupled with a job experience. So I think at the end of the day, we believe that our young people did have a meaningful summer experience with participation. As you know, we've talked previously, our goal was to try to serve more young people, but given the resource limitations that we had, these are the results of where we are. I will note that, you know, this report is preliminary. We're gonna do a deeper dive because we also want to assure you and ourselves that young people did experience a impactful experience and that there are some documented lessons learned and skills developed from this program. So we will provide a more comprehensive report at a later date, but we want to provide you with this initial summary to just let you know what activities occurred in your various municipalities. I would entertain any questions you may have. And Madam Chair, while I have the floor, I'd also like to speak to another program that is launching as well, but I will entertain questions on the summer program first.
Anyone have any questions for Alex Johnson in regards to the summer youth employment program? Seeing none, the floor is yours, Alex.
Thank you. And I also wanted to bring everyone's attention to the fact that we have been, Capital Workforce Partners has been working the Governor's Workforce Council, and the governor made $10 million of CARES Act funding available to the Governor's Workforce Council to provide short-term training to individuals who have been affected by COVID, individuals who have been laid off, as well as having a priority for our opportunity youth. Opportunity youth are those individuals who are 18 to 24, out of school and out of work. So those were the two primary populations that the Governor's Workforce Council sought to support. And they invited the five workforce boards to submit applications to provide short-term training, but with the goal of ensuring that we're able to not only provide the training, but that we have employers identified to provide employment to those individuals who successfully complete. And I'd like to note that Capital Workforce Partners, as a result of this process, has been awarded $3.7 million to provide support to 418 individuals. Those individuals are going to be provided training in a number of areas. The majority will be in allied in the healthcare sector. We're working with a number of healthcare employers who have expressed the need for training in pharmacy tech, sterile processing technicians and CNAs. So we're going to be working with those employers and the community colleges to provide training for individuals in this area. IT is another area where employers have expressed the need, and we're going to be providing opportunities for training using two vendors. They're proprietary organizations, but they are specialized in providing IT training to individuals. The financial services area is another area where we're going to be providing training in colleges. Manufacturing, although it's soft, within our grant, we do have resources to support employers who want to re-engage employees. So we do have a wage subsidy program, particularly designed for manufacturers who want to hire and use the wage subsidy program as a vehicle to enable them to bring new employees on. So we do have a component specific to manufacturing that addresses that area. Also, we're going to be providing training in the construction and the transportation area. But in addition to the training, what we're also excited about is that this resource also enables us to provide a very handsome stipend to individuals to supplement their income while they're going through training. So individuals in training will receive a $200 a week stipend. Also, this training is largely going to be virtual based. So we also will, for those who are in need, provide laptops to individuals so that they can participate and benefit from the training. We've also formed a partnership with the Office of Early Childhood to ensure that individuals are provided with childcare supports. We do recognize that even though the training is virtual, individuals will be home-based, but we also recognize that the individuals need the freedom to commit to the training and have support around their childcare needs. So that's another special feature of this program, as well as providing transportation assistance. So I wanted to bring this program to your attention. This information is all on our website. We are actively recruiting for these various programs. Now they will be starting, within the next month or two. We think this is a good opportunity to provide some immediate relief to those individuals who have been affected by COVID. So I'd like to get some supplemental information out to you so you could pass this information into your community so we can ensure that individuals are aware and have access to this training opportunity. So thank you, Madam Chair, for the time to report on this item. And I'll also be happy to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Great, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Alex? If not, Capital Workforce Partners continues to be a great resource for you to direct people to their website for information, and we appreciate all your efforts, Alex, in ensuring that in this day and age that all the people that find themselves without the that need retooling or access to training have that too. So thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Next, we have a presentation or an update from Deputy Transportation Commissioner Garrett Ucolito. I can say it without thinking about it, and then when I think about it, I try to read it, I can't say it. Garrett, I'm sorry for Ucolito.
That's okay, Mayor LeClaire. I appreciate it. So
I'm stumbling. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up a presentation briefly, just walk through a brief presentation, and then save time to have a conversation with everyone. So hopefully you can see the title slide there.
Yep.
So just, I want to cover three issues today. One, talk about what we've been doing during COVID. Two, talk about public transportation during the COVID period. And then lastly, talk about the state of our special transportation fund. So my name is Garrett Ucolito. I'm Deputy Commissioner here at DOT. I just joined in January. I have worked in Connecticut state government before. Several years ago, I worked at OPM, working with councils of governments, also covering transportation issues. But I also want to take this time to introduce all of you to Kim Lassay. She is our new Bureau Chief for Policy and Planning. She replaced Tom Maziarz, who has recently retired. So Kim is on the call today. And so she is available to help answer questions as well. But she's a face that many of you will get to know pretty well over the next several years as she steps into Tom's shoes. So I wanted to make sure to take the time to introduce you to her. So briefly, what have we been doing during COVID? Similar to your public works staff, our DOT team has continued working since March during COVID. We did stagger shifts at the very peak of it to ensure we didn't lose an entire garage, but we've been out there doing the work we've had to do. We did see, and this dashboard is actually published on the front page of our website, tracking traffic volumes. So we did see a significant drop off in roadway traffic volumes, as you can see on the screen here. But unfortunately, that was accompanied by increased speeds and increased fatalities. So this is the beginning of the pandemic through April in Wethersfield on I-91. And then you see almost up to today, it's almost back up to the average daily traffic volume. So traffic has returned back to where it was before in most of the locations across the state. As I mentioned, though, we are on track to have one of our deadliest years in recent memory on our roadways. And when you consider that there was such a significant drop off in traffic volumes, that is fairly concerning. So the number of fatal crashes compared to the number of miles traveled in our state is even higher. During the drop in traffic, we were able to expedite some projects, get more daylight work hours because there was no rush hour. So our metrics were really, really favorable in terms of any delayed until the next federal fiscal year. Now we've gone back to normal construction hours for all of our projects as a result of the return traffic volumes. We did take advantage of some federal waivers. We were, I think, the second state to take advantage of the food trucks at our rest areas. Normally it's prohibited by federal law. We did it temporarily to help the truckers who were transporting a lot of the PPE all across the Northeast region. We also were the first state to take advantage of outdoor dining within our state rights of way. And we have, I think, a dozen restaurants now taking advantage of that across the state. We have moved to virtual public information meetings. Unfortunately, we're not on Zoom. We're using Microsoft Teams, which is much less user-friendly. But we have started hosting them all virtually, and then we post them online within 7 days of the meeting. And similar to all of you who had to manage the tropical storm, as well as the recent microburst that came through, in some other parts of the state, we were ready to respond to help clear the roadways. Had to juggle working with the utilities to try and make safe so we could get the roads clear for everyone. Public transportation, briefly, thanks in large part to our congressional delegation, we received the $488 million for public transportation operations to help cover our bus and rail systems throughout this pandemic. Without it, we would not be able to continue to provide the services we're providing today. It has helped cover that fare box revenue loss as a lot of our bus systems moved to rear door entry and stopped fare enforcement to protect the drivers while we install barriers for them. And the rail system, significant loss in ridership. So this covers the fare box loss. It also helped pay for a lot of the cleaning supplies. But when you look at the transit system, we're continuing to do an equity analysis here in terms of the impacts, but bus ridership has stayed very high and we've continued to provide the bus services throughout the state. We really haven't reduced any bus services throughout the pandemic because ridership was still there even during the peak of the pandemic. Rail services, we did pare back, and that is because ridership dropped so significantly. So for some reason, the legend didn't show up when I pasted this, but the top line here you see is the bus ridership from March 9th through just almost to today. The second line down is the Hartford line, which is the highest performing of the rail systems right now in terms of percent of ridership return. The next one down is Metro North New Haven line. It's still pretty low, but creeping back up a little bit. It's around 80% return in ridership. And the bottom one is Shoreline East. And finally, just want to flag, we continue to host events to distribute masks to the public who are riding our buses and our rail system. We're partnering with all the transit districts to make these announcements, have these signs on all the buses. We are doing our best to enforce it, and we've actually seen significant adherence to the mask rules. I've been riding on weekends in a few of the different major districts, and yesterday I was out in New Haven using the bus system, and I counted probably just my casual observance around 95% of adherence to the mask rules, which is pretty significant. One thing I just want to go back to on the rail side. So the $488 million in CARES funds, the one thing I'll flag, the Hartford line is ineligible for that, and we are working with our delegation to try and resolve that. We were the only public rail system in the country to not receive funding under that. It was, we believe, a drafting error because we are the first operational line as a result of the high-speed intercity passenger rail system grant that was received to launch the system. So all the money for FTA went to FTA-funded rail systems, and the Hartford line is funded through the Federal Rail Administration. So that's why we believe it was a drafting error, and we're working with our delegation to resolve that. Special Transportation Fund, I know everyone's heard about this over the past probably decade or so. It continues to be an issue, and COVID has actually accelerated the issue. In fiscal year 20, OPM estimated a loss of around $180 million below what the revenues were expected to be, and they're projecting $140 million loss of below what they are were expecting revenues to be before the pandemic. So that is accelerating the issue in the STF. As you can see in the chart there, that is what OPM Secretary McCaw submitted to Comptroller Lembo. So that's the most recent numbers. Congress has yet to provide the revenue backstop that the state DOTs are asking for to help fill that gap. And a lot of that gap is because our transportation fund in Connecticut is a consumption-based revenue, gas tax, sales tax on cars, both new and used, and oil companies tax, which is tied to the price of a barrel of oil. So consumption-based and the depressed price of oil, all of that's contributing to a loss there. The gas tax is actually back up to close to where it was before, but the sales tax, the new and used car sales taxes, and the oil company's taxes continue to be low, as well as licenses and permits issued by the DMV are low. So without any action, they're projecting a insolvency in fiscal year 2022. FTA CARES funds are allowing us to continue to operate public transportation. If we didn't receive those FTA CARES funds that the delegation helped us secure, we'd be having a very different conversation. So it really has been a lifesaver for us in this state. So what are we going to be doing the next 3 to 6 months? We're going to continue to move forward with all of our capital projects and our capital plan at this time. We're waiting on to see what Congress's actions are. And then we're continuing to work with all the councils of governments on lots of projects. We're working with local governments on local bridge projects, community connectivity grants, things like that. Community connectivity grant, just want to flag, the third round of funding was approved by the Bond Commission. So we do have a request for projects out there issued by our office. And if you didn't receive that, you can let us know, or let, I'm sure Lyle and the team have made you aware of that too. I saw that in the previous slide from them. We are going to allow our staff to continue to telework if their job function allows them to do that for the foreseeable future, for at least this this fall period. We are performing and functioning really well in the telework space for our planners, for our fiscal folks, for a lot of our engineers. There's some jobs that can't be done via telework. The equipment is just not possible at their home, so they have to come in. So that's allowing us to space people out. But for those who can telework, we're gonna continue to allow them to telework. We are preparing for the next legislative session as the legislature comes back, and however that might look like. We are preparing our legislative proposals. Pam Sicato, who I know many of you may know, she's our liaison to the Capitol. She's helping prepare that package. And our other Deputy Commissioner Mark Rolfe and our new Chief Engineer Scott Hill, they did a briefing for the COG Executive Directors, I believe recently, in the past few weeks, on our five-year capital plan development process, and we are starting that process now. We'll be engaging further with the COGs on that process as we prepare that. And lastly, we're going to continue to advocate for a revenue backstop for the transportation fund and parity for the Hartford line. So that's what we're up to. Here's my contact information, Kim Lassay, our new bureau chief's contact info, Grayson's info. I really want to just take this opportunity to say, as I will for only, since January, I'd like to get out, and I know Kim wants to get out too, and meet people, come to your communities. If you have projects of interest that you're working on or that you just don't know how to proceed with it, we're happy to talk to you anytime, to come out and meet with you on your own turf. You all are where the rubber's meeting the road for us. So we want to continue the great partnership we have with CROG and with all of your municipalities. So feel free to reach out to us anytime. And with that, I will stop sharing and pull it down.
Thank you, Garrett. Are there any questions for regards to his presentation?
Mayor, this is Matt Hart in West Hartford.
Yep, Matt.
Thank you. Garrett, welcome back to Connecticut. It's good to have you. I'm sorry, I caught just the final part of your presentation. Could you tell me just briefly where the department stands on the Hartford Rail station projects?
On the station projects, they are still they're still in design, right? There's no funding available for construction for those yet. But we did receive funding previously under previous Bond Commission actions to continue to advance the design. So when the design reaches to the point where it reaches where it's at a state where we could pursue construction, it goes into our over-programmed list of projects in our capital plan. So that's something that we would just need to, if first we have to resolve the special transportation fund issue before our capital plan can expand, to be honest. That's without a future funding for the STF, we're going to face significant issues in the future. So, but those projects are continuing to advance in the design stage.
Oh, Mayor, this is Matt. A quick follow-up to that.
Yep.
So, Garrett, I thought design on our station was halted due to funding concerns. Is that not accurate? Is it proceeding again?
I'll check on the West Hartford one. I know at least a couple of them are still under design. They've received funding, so I'll check for you.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, could yes. I add a question?
Yep.
Thank you very much, Garrett. A question in terms of the 2021 session, how can we be helpful? As you well know from your previous life, we weighed in on the STF several times. If that's something else we could do, that would be one point. The second, I think, is we're still trying to get an electronic, transparent state to MPO system in place, such as Iowa and Florida, where everything is on a single SharePoint portal we can all look at. Florida, I think, had 21 MPOs and it cost $50,000 to do it, took 6 months. So we're up to, I think we would probably even pay for it if it needed to get done, but we want to get a 21st century portal together. And I guess the final thing is, on transit-oriented development, this is a broader conversation we've had, we're going to probably do a review on how we can accelerate this. First Selectman Kervik is here, but I think there's a need to have a rethink about how we get this to move more quickly. Obviously, there's many, many other things like keeping the system solvent and others, but that's another issue. But those are 3 points. I think the main one, though, is, Madam Chair, we're going to have to do an legislative agenda, which is a pretty strange environment to be doing it in. But if we can be helpful, Garrett, on that, you know, please let us know.
Yeah, I'll say on the legislative piece, you know, we're in the process of compiling that now. The funding piece really becomes an OPM issue. And DOT, we don't collect the funds.
Right.
When it came to tolls discussion in under previous years or in earlier this year, that intimately involved us. But when it comes yep. to the taxes, we don't have a role to play per se, but we provide information to OPM. And so we're going to take our direction from them on that. And I'm sure they will definitely need the support of everyone on this call. A large piece of our legislative proposals are going to focus on safety. That is a significant concern for us. And so we are going to put together a robust safety package to try and address this crisis on our roadways. So
a theme at our theme that has come up as a theme in our transportation committee too, in terms of the safety going in the wrong direction in terms of performance measures. So
yeah, and
so thank you very much.
Statewide mm-hmm. MPO portal, I don't know if Mary Beth Wojcinski's on here. That is something we definitely would like to move forward with. You know, now that our entire agency is on Office 365, we viewed that as an opportunity to roll it out. I believe there's a few cogs that are not yet on that system and they're using the old Windows Office system. So
sure.
We can get that resolved. I think we have a path forward. So.
Yeah, I think we can basically buy some carrier pigeons for the last holdouts. But Office 365 includes SharePoint Portal, which is the actual piece of software. So anything we do to facilitate that, because I think for all of us, shuffling paper around in this kind of environment really doesn't make a lot of sense. So anything we can be helpful on. And then finally, Madam Chair, with respect to STF, obviously the fallout hits us directly too. So we're very interested in, I understand you've got to go up the food, you know, up the tree in terms of the governor's policies and the tax policies. But if the STF situation is not resolved, everyone in this call is going to hurt. So it's pretty straightforward. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Thank you. Now, Scott, I know you had your hand up.
Yep. I did. I too was interested in the STF and see if there was any kind of a preliminary proposal that was out there. I know we've struggled with this for some years, resolved it for a while, then didn't. But it sounds like there really is not going. There's currently not a specific proposal. It's just waiting to go.
Not yet.
And I'm fine. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Yeah, the way we work as agencies is we have to submit our proposals to the governor's office and OPM by October 1st. And then the 3 months after that are their budget development process. And then they tell us where the budget stands and where our legislative proposals stand. So.
Thank you, Garrett. Is there any other questions that would like to be asked of Garrett? If not, thank you, Garrett, for taking the time to come on. It certainly was informative. This type of information is always important for us to hear not only where we stand with funding, but also the greater impacts to us as a state, and then those the issues that would have done generally affect us as well as communities. So appreciate all that information, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again down the road.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you.
The next items that are coming before us are action items, resolutions that need to be passed. For the first item, I recognize Pauline Yoder.
This is a CARES Act statewide planning grant for recovery planning from COVID-19 that OPM granted for us. It's in conjunction. It's the phase one of the EDA grant that we submitted. And so we received that on September 1, and we'd like a resolution to accept the grant.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Questions? Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
And the motion carries. The next item to come before us, I recognize Pauline again.
So this is a subgrantee agreement with a Global Resilience Institute to actually do the work for the phase one planning. It's a sole source because of the timing of it. The grant has to be done by December 17th, which is a very tight timeline. GRI has extensive experience with recovery planning and has done extensive work specifically in the Northeast for this kind of planning event. And if people are interested at our regional long-term committee meeting, they'll be presenting a deeper dive into this as well.
Thank you. Any questions for Pauline? Do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
Second, Spielman.
Chip Spielman. Any other questions? If none, all in favor?
Aye.
And the motion carries. The next item to come before us is a resolution authorizing CROG to participate in the RFP process for the federal legislative and executive branch liaison. For that, I recognize Lyle.
Thank you. This is an item that has hatched out of a discussion with Pioneer Valley, the Knowledge Corridor, and the Franklin Regional Council of Governments for the pursuit of a federal liaison. We have that obviously in Rome Smith Lutz. This is a federal proposal that would relate largely to transportation, workforce, and other related issues for securing input and opportunities related to grants. The idea would be CROG share would be no larger than 15,000. I think it could be considerably smaller. This is written as a not to exceed. Pioneer Valley would do a big chunk of the procurement on the RFP. We would be involved. As I said, the focus areas would be workforce and transportation grants. And we would keep everybody informed on this. It's a modest amount of money, but again, having someone in Washington on our behalf, we think would be very helpful for this region. And the reason we're doing it regionally is we think our workforce and transportation and related issues are significantly related, so we wouldn't be competitive in a lot of this. So I'd be happy to answer questions. I think it's something that could be a value add for us, and hope you could support it.
Any questions for Lyle in regards to that?
I have one there.
Yes, Chet.
Yeah, Lyle, you know, you've talked in the past about major metropolitan areas, and the real big metropolitan areas are the ones that are growing. Does getting up to 1.7 million people of the two areas get us to the point of being considered a major metropolitan area, like a Boston or a Denver?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think getting to the 1.7 million makes us more attractive for grants. As you recall, we got the sustainability grant for $4 million because we did it as a larger region. So I think that when we go in there with a rail improvement study to Boston, for example, or other workforce issues for 1.7 million, it's actually much, much more competitive. But the purpose of this position is also, I think, to have an ear to the ground in terms of opportunities that are emerging that don't necessarily get to us, and then to be more competitive as a region to get access to those things. So those are the two fronts. But yes, I think we're definitely more competitive when we're in a larger region. You know, nobody wants to give a grant to 100,000 people, relatively speaking, in terms of the larger federal bills, but we're more competitive at 1.7 million. So I hope that responds to your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions for Lyle in regards to this? Certainly, I fully support this. I think it's great to have someone down there that can advocate on our behalf and bring back information that may be critical, especially when there will be funds that will be most tenant probably released that we need to know about and have immediate action on in order to try to receive them or to apply for them. So if there's no other questions, do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So move.
A second? Spielman.
Any other questions, concerns? None. Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And the motion carries. I'm assuming we're all yeses. I'm not asking for any nays. So I'm sure the voice contention, if there was. The next resolution that's being presented is authorizing CROG, Executive Director, to submit a spending plan and enter into an MOU for the fiscal year 2020 Federal Homeland Security Grant funding from DAMIS Region 3. Cheryl, am I recognizing? Or Lori?
Or Lori, maybe?
I think Cheryl.
Okay.
Sure. So the CAP Region Emergency Planning Committee, or CREPC, approved this spending plan at their July quarterly meeting. And as the mayor said, the resolution is to authorize Lyle to sign off on it and submit it. Essentially, we're going to be receiving a little over $387,000 from the State Homeland Security Grant Program. It's a slight increase from last year, as there's a new federal requirement. We have to purchase a barricade system for the region. And the other areas funded as traditional or planning services, the maintenance and sustainment of existing equipment, training and exercise, and then they're set aside for the Hartford Bomb Squad, which doubles as our regional bomb squad.
Any questions for Cheryl? I have a question. So if you purchase the barricade, where does it get stored?
You know, that's a good question, Mayor. The requirement just came out, so they haven't fleshed it out too well. What I foresee happening is we bring this up at our CAP Region Police Chiefs Association meetings. I know in the past there's been interest in purchasing such a system. Most of them do go in some type of a tractor trailer truck. So we would likely store it in a central location, and then it would be able to move to wherever it's needed for, you know, whatever type of crowd control or mass gathering or whatnot, but the likely in a central location. We'd enter into an agreement with the town who's willing to host it, most likely.
And how big is the barricade?
That's a good question. You know, we have to look into that. When we did it before, you know, it is fairly significant in terms of fitting in some type of a tractor trailer. But we only looked at one type of system, and that was rather expensive. The funding that they're giving us is only about $42,000. So I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to do with that. I'm going to also work with the other four regions. I've offered that to them already, so that if we do some type of an RFP or whatnot, you know, we may want to all purchase the same type of system.
Great. Any other questions for Cheryl? If not, do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So move.
Chip, second.
Connell Sister, second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
And no opposed? None. Motion carries. Metropolitan Planning Organization items come before us. We have number 11 on the agenda. There is actually no TIP amendments, so seeing none, we can move right on. Number 12, I'll recognize John Coleman for an action item, the 2020 lots of solicitation project selection that was in your package.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, John had an unexpected conflict, so I'm going to give the report here. Yeah, we went out for a 2020 LOTSIP solicitation for LOTSIP projects. We went out for approximately 2 years worth of funding, of LOTSIP funding. And the result of that is in your packet, there's a memo. And on the second page of the memo, there's a listing of projects and the cost requested and the total of how much is recommended for funding. And of all those in total, it's amounts to $40.2 million worth of projects in the form of 23 projects from 21 different municipalities. So at the Transportation Committee in August, actually, these were presented and the Transportation Committee recommended that the Policy Board approve of these projects to go into the LOTSIP bin of LOTSIP projects for forwarding over to CONDOT for eventual commitment to fund letters. So we're looking for action on solidifying these and our ability to get these over to CONDOT.
Right. Do we have any questions for Rob? Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Hart.
Second, Spielman.
Second. Any additional questions for Rob? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. The next item that we have is the fiscal year 21 through 24 draft transportation improvement program. And fiscal year 21-24 draft state transportation improvement program. And Rob, I assume that you're going to be taking that.
Yes, thank you. These are two documents that are produced every 3 to 4 years. They're very related to each other. The state transportation improvement program is all projects in the state that use federal funding. The transportation improvement program, or just the TIP, is our portion of that. It's the projects within CROG that utilize federal funding. So this is not all projects flowing through DOT, but it's the ones that are anticipated to use federal funds, which we as the designated Metropolitan Planning Agents organization need to sign off on. So there are links right now. This is in the draft form for both these documents. We're in the public review period. So this is brought to you for information only at this point, and we're not expected to act on this until the October meeting. But I did want to highlight some important dates. There's information in your packet regarding how the state and the TIP is being rolled out and how the public involvement process is working. But some critical milestone dates for the TIP, which is just the CROG portion, is we're holding virtual public meetings on two of them on September 30th, one during the day, one at night. And we have the public comment period open until October 12th. Some key things in the TIP document there are no real unexpected projects. A lot of the more major new efforts, the state in our region, the state is utilizing state-only funds or predicting to use state-only funds for those. So there are a limited number of projects that are major in nature, and they're mostly of the rehabilitation or maintaining the existing system nature. The most major is a bridge over the Connecticut River for I-91 rehabilitation. There's also the second biggest one is CT transit facility upgrades. And a third is the Berlin Turnpike upgrading all the signals to the most recent standards. So those are the three major projects in the document. There's a lot of smaller projects. And like I said, and Garrett alluded to, Windsor Locks train station and major projects like that, I think is State Bond Commission approved and funded. So that type of project would not be in this document. So I just thought I'd give an update on this. This is not an action item for this month, but would be for next month. So as the designated MPO, we need to approve this. And we're in the public comment period now. The Transportation Committee will also review this, has also been given a heads up on this, and will be asked to approve this in October.
Rob, just one question. Can you just verify the virtual informational meeting date? I mean, it says September 23rd.
Oh, this, yeah, that is the state one. Sorry, I didn't highlight that. The STIP, which is the full state,
okay.
The public meeting is on September 23rd, and the public comment period is open until October 9th.
Okay.
For ours, which the information is on our website, and I don't think it's in the packet, but no, our public meeting, sorry about that, ours is on September 30th, and the public comment period is open
until October 12th. It's in the narrative in the first section there.
Okay.
From 1 to 7, yeah.
Okay.
It's there. It was me that was confused. Thank you.
Yeah, they're such related documents that it's.
All right. Any questions for Rob? Seeing none, we'll move on. Kathy, do you have a legislative update for us?
I do. They are trying to go in for another special session the end of this month. Right now, the Senate is looking at the 24th or 25th, and the House the 30th. They are planning on, as yet, undefined tweaks to the police accountability bill. Minor, supposedly, more having to do with the personal liability. That was a very huge problem for most of the unions. Potentially some school construction grants, and they want to address politically they refer to the Eversource United Illuminating issues from the storms. But there really isn't a whole lot concrete on that. Let me just see if I'm missing anything else. There are potentially a couple of the executive orders that may require legislative action if this were to be the last special session. Before January. So a lot of it's up in the air, but right now we're looking at that the very last week of this month.
Thank you, Kathy. Any questions for Kathy?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Tony.
Okay, this is Tony Moran from Mansfield. As you may know, we are in the process of planning the construction of a new elementary school, which will consolidate our three existing elementary schools and will be probably the first full building that will be net neutral and from energy consumption in the state in a public school. It is extremely important to us that the school bonding bill gets passed, and I would really like to ask Prague for its full support for this construction.
I'm not sure if they're looking at doing bonding or just requested school construction grant. But I don't know where your request lie. I understand
from our legislators that there's a bonding bill under consideration, and that's the bill that we need to have adopted.
Okay, let me see if I can find out. I had heard the some school construction grants, but let me look and see if they're going to do more bonding.
Okay, whatever it takes to get the final approvals for us to build this building, it's such an ideal time to do construction, both from an economic point of view and to put money back into the economy, and for educational purposes as well. So thanks.
Hi, this is Brian O'Connor. I understand that it would be part of the school construction bill. So we'll confirm that it's in there.
Thanks, Brian.
I think there's many other communities that are waiting for that that information as well that have school construction projects.
If I may,
yes.
General Assessor, on school construction grants, just cautionary tale and an opportunity that we ought to push for. They're proposing to change dramatically the air handling systems due to COVID, the state building codes for that. I had to pull the plug on a HVAC project at our high school because I was told by our consultant that you're going to build this and in a year it's going to be non-code compliant. Whoever's doing school construction ought to have a heart-to-heart with their mechanical engineers to make sure that they're going to meet these new standards that aren't adopted yet. But so just a cautionary tale on that. But then the opportunity is, I think we ought to, if they open that door for talking about school construction grants, we ought to push adamantly that state construction grants to improve HVAC systems to comply with these new standards become eligible. Specifically, many of our schools have unit ventilators. Those unit ventilators do not and cannot be converted to meet any of these new air handling systems. And currently, while they don't meet code, the state doesn't pay to replace them or upgrade them to meet code because they're not noise compliant. But more importantly, they will not have the airflow capacity. And I think it's a serious statewide school construction issue that needs to be addressed. Our old schools cannot meet the COVID air handling system, and people just aren't talking enough about it. And we need to get moving, and it has to be kind of an emergency approach to get these things done, because we can't get our student population up and be safe.
Thank you. All right, well, thank you. So Tony, did you want us to take any action on that? Are you looking for us to support it in some way, or are you just looking for Kathy to kind of mine the information?
Well, I would love support, but if I don't know if you know enough about the project to do that right now. I can tell you more about it if you'd like.
Well, I just didn't know from CROG, if you wanted CROG just to generally support it with a letter for any school projects for our membership. I was wondering what you were looking for specifically. We certainly...
That would be terrific.
Madam Chair, maybe between Brian and Kathy, we can figure out what the lay of the land is in terms of this and see how we could be helpful.
Yeah, I think so. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. So any other business to come before us? We do have one item that we would like to raise.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair, before we skip over it, the draft meeting schedule is there. Please we need feedback on that because we don't want to step on the
CCM cost or other things. I had it under my notes. So there's two calendars, one for the 2021 regular meeting schedule of the Policy Board and one the Executive Committee 2021 regular meeting schedule, both of which were in your packets but are on the screen as well. So... if anyone has any questions, has done a look at it, any concerns that they have with any of the dates, like Lyle said, we do need to move forward with securing them. So
Madam Chair, in terms of other business, I think Matt Hart has one, but I wanted to shoehorn in a conversation that you and I and others had with Congressman Larson and others, requesting us to develop a letter related to a support and underlining the importance of a variety of issues, such as the I-84 viaduct reform, the I-91 I-84 interchange, the dikes and levees, and other important core improvement areas. And what I guess might make sense, Madam Chair, is to get a sense of the board for writing that letter to the governor and the transportation commissioner, re-emphasizing the importance of accelerating and making sure those things are moving along in a timely fashion. The second piece I might add is, depending on what happens on the election, there are rumors of large infrastructure bills, and it would be very helpful for us to be on record in putting those forward. And again, we can certainly talk about this, but the I-84 viaduct, for example, carries mostly traffic from outside of Hartford. It's not people in Hartford using it. So it's a regional issue, as is 91. So, Madam Chair, the suggestion based on the conversation you had with Congressman Larson would be for the board to offer a sense of the board that you could write a letter to the governor, DOT, and others in support of those core projects in the region to put those on the radar.
Yeah, so I was wondering if what the sense was from our membership in regards to allowing CROG to and I to compose a letter to be sent in support of those transportation initiatives and ready ourselves in support for any federal funding that would come through. Is there anyone have any concerns, or are they supportive of such an action? Thoughts, comments? If not, I'll take it as a we can go ahead.
Sounds good.
Therefore, then right. we will compose a letter outlining those.
And we'll send everybody.
Yep. Areas. Yep.
And right. We'll copy the board, obviously, Madam Chair.
Yep.
And then
yep.
Matt Hart had a suggestion.
I don't see Matt Hart up here. Matt?
He's here.
Oh,
no,
thank
I mean,
you, Mayor.
He didn't pop up as a talker on my screen.
Thank you, Mayor. Matt Hart here. A small issue in the context of everything we're dealing with. I get that. But I wonder if there's room for a conversation somewhere about a regional approach to Halloween. I know we're starting to get questions from members of the public and the press. In our view, ideally, there'd be a unified state approach, but I'm not sure the administration plans to do that. So I'm not sure if, I was wondering if this was an issue one of our committees could talk about, you know, what type of guidance we might want to provide our communities on how to do this safely.
Are you looking for us to make a global determination whether it advance or whether we all just say it's not going to happen? Is that...
Well, my question is, are others interested, are other towns interested in talking about a regional approach to Halloween? You know, if not, fine, certainly understand and respect that. But, you know, quite frequently, you know, folks will cross over into other towns, maybe trick or treat in multiple towns, what have you. Just thinking it could make sense to have a regional approach here.
Well,
so I just wanted to see if others share that the interest.
I'm happy to participate in a regional approach. I guess I'm just looking to see whether the approach is to say that we are not supportive of Halloween, or if you had something else in mind.
Like guidelines for actually carrying it out or something like that, if you do?
Right. I mean,
I was thinking more the latter, you know, guidelines on what are some safe alternatives. And I think there'll be various organizations that will be looking to sponsor things so that can be done more safely. Like West Farms Mall, for example, is contemplating something that could be a better option as opposed to proposing an outright ban.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on Matt has raised?
We talked about it this morning, and we kind of thought in Glastonbury we go from urban to very rural, that it's up to parents. If they want to go out trick-or-treating with their kids, that's up to you. If you don't want to because you don't feel safe, that's up to you. But it's we've seen with Storm Alfred, we had a hard time with people for and against something that the kids were deprived if they didn't do anything. And I don't know if town government really has a role in that compared to parent decision-making in neighborhoods.
Madam Mayor, can I chip in?
Sure, Tony.
Tony Moran, Mansfield. We've begun to talk about this because we have an event in downtown stores and also one at our community center which attracts people from neighboring towns, people who don't want to go door to door in rural communities, but who like the idea of a communal celebration of some sort. I think guidelines would be extremely helpful. I don't know whether they should come from CROG or from the governor's office, but I think some kind of guideline, and my guess is, given what our health department has said all along, would be wear a mask, wash your hands, stay distant. But I don't know how you would distribute candy to kids, and it would be really helpful to have some guidance on that.
Well, it's
Madam Chair, if I could make a request that Kathy talk to the governor's office whether they have any plans on this. If you talk to Paula Mounds or somebody else, I know obviously they have a lot of things on their agenda, but if they have a plan, then we could, go from there. Otherwise, we could certainly put together a group to look at some of the options. I'm sorry, I just wanted to put that on the table. So
I think it's worth exploring. So why don't we see if the governor's going to make a call on that?
And then we can follow up in terms of guidance after that. But it seemed to be the first thing.
I can just tell you that in the October 21st snowstorm, when Halloween was canceled, it was like bedlam in my community. I never saw so much uproar. We could have raised taxes 7 times and we wouldn't have had the outpour that we had when Halloween was canceled. So
you never know. You never know. It was like when a person landed on the moon in 1969, people were incensed. They canceled soap operas for the live coverage. So, I'm serious. But so if we follow up, Madam Chair and Matt, I think the idea of seeing if the governor is going to move on this, if not, I think we could look at some options. Yeah. Obviously, this is going to be statewide and national in terms of what guidelines are being offered. So we can certainly follow up. But I guess the first step would be to see if the governor is going to take an action, and then we can follow up whether, what kind of guidelines we might take with CCM costs and others. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Department of Public Health and the governor's office feels. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for their time. Is there anything else that needs to come before the committee? If not, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, Spielman.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much, and stay safe and be
Thanks,
well.
Thanks, everybody.